Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Back in the 1980s, Tony Rinaldo was an agricultural scientist with a strong Christian faith and a passion for bringing positive change to Africa. He headed off to Africa with world vision. But after 4 years of effort, he was at a very low point. Nothing that he was doing seemed to work. The trees were dying in the ground and there was very little interest from the locals. Well, it was just then, at his lowest point, that Tony had a eureka moment, a moment that he believes was given to him by God. And the result, some 200 million trees later, has been nothing short of spectacular.
Part of the activities involved planting trees. Much of the landscape had been cleared. And in order to have sensible agriculture under the very harsh conditions on the edge of the Sahara Desert, you had to have some level of tree cover in that landscape.
How long had it been devoid of trees?
Since about the 60s, it was a gradual process, but as populations increased, the pressure on the land increased, and from the mid-60s, I'd say, onwards, a lot of the original tree cover almost completely disappeared. And in fact, by the time we arrived in Niger in 1980, average tree density was around 4 trees per hectare, so very low cover.
Yes, it's interesting. We look at these landscapes now and we think, oh yes, desert, poverty, all goes together. But in fact, the poverty or the economic circumstances of the people have helped to create the agricultural desert, therefore reduce the productivity, and it's a race to the bottom, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. And particularly in those harsher environments, it's absolutely critical to have some level of tree cover in the system.
So our response then as aid organisations is to send people like you out there with lots of trees and money that's been donated by very well-meaning people, and we'll go out and we'll plant the trees and we'll train people to plant trees and we'll give them work planting trees and we'll plant all these trees. It's all going to be great.
And that's exactly what we were trying to do, but the people thought we were really crazy. In fact, they called me the crazy white farmer.
The crazy white farmer. I love it.
Yes. Well, you can imagine, here they were living on the edge of starvation every year and desperately needing money for basic needs. And here's this young white fella come out to tell them they should be planting trees. It just didn't make sense to them.
Yes. And after a while, it didn't make any sense to you either, did it? That's the truth of it.
Well, certainly, it made the concept made sense. It just simply didn't work, and this was the point of frustration.
And was it more than frustration? It must have felt. Was there a sense of helplessness there?
Oh yes, and I think I was angry with God. I wondered why God had brought me out there. It had very, very strong sense of call, and everything that I was doing seemed to be failing. So. Bewildered, really.
Well, just to pause there for a moment, because we might not be on the edge of the Sahara Desert, but in our Christian lives at home, at work, at school, that's a point where many of us get to.
Yes.
Angry with God, not feeling how we can make a difference.
Yes. Fortunately for me, I felt that even though I didn't understand what was going on and why it was so difficult, I had that strong sense of call and that God did bring me out there for a purpose. And I clung on to the Ephesians 2:10, that he had prepared good things for us to do in advance. And even though I couldn't see it at the time, I believed it. And I think the turning point was when you get to that low point and you just put it on the table and ask God, help. Show us what to do. That was the turning point. And that's when my eyes were open to seeing what was literally at our feet, what had been there the whole 2.5 years of my time in Niger, but I'd been blind to it.
Well, tell me about that moment. How did that happen?
So on this day, I was delivering a load of trees to the villagers, knowing full well that most of them would die and the people weren't interested anyway. And because the roads are very sandy, you let some of the air pressure out of the tyres. And as I was doing that, I was looking across the landscape, feeling very sorry for myself. It was very barren, and I knew that what I was doing was hopeless. But for some reason on this day, and even though I was on this track maybe twice a week for the previous 2.5 years, for some reason, these small bushes on the side of the road caught my eye. And instead of just ignoring them, I walked over and took a closer look. And in that instant, everything changed, because in seeing the leaf, I recognized it immediately. These weren't bushes. These were trees. And if you brush the sand away, you'd find a stump under there. And so in the recent past, these trees had been cut down, maybe for firewood, maybe for land clearing, for agriculture. But there's no heavy machinery in that part of Africa. So the stumps remain, and people just planted over them. We hadn't recognized that the forest was still there. I call it an underground forest.
Right.
And when I say the game had changed, I realized we were no longer fighting the Sahara Desert, and it wasn't a question of having a large budget or some super species of tree that was drought tolerant and could survive. It was really a battle for hearts and minds. And if we could convince people that it was in their best interest to allow some of these little bushes to grow back into full-size trees, then the battle would be won. The rest would be easy.
Because this was actually the trees trying to do what God had put in them to do, to regenerate. And that's not a bad metaphor for the Christian life itself.
That's correct. The tree knows perfectly well how to become a tree again, but we put all kinds of obstacles in its way. And yes, yeah.
So who opened your eyes to see that tree there?
Well, I believe that was the answer to prayer. Because, you know, I'd been walking through the fields. I'd been driving along that path for 2.5 years. The bushes were always there, but I hadn't been noticing them. So for me, that was very much God's answer to prayer. And when we realized that, we knew that we didn't have to continue planting trees. We just needed to work with people and help them to understand what was going on.
Is it fair enough to say that this is one of the most significant discoveries that's been made in bringing aid to Africa for a very, very long time? Now, you're going to be bashful, but don't be bashful.
Well, I'll speak somebody else's words. So I had the privilege of travelling to Somalia last year, and there were a group of journalists with us, and journalists tend to be sceptical and always looking for secret agendas and for problems. And
really?
Amongst themselves, I was told later on, amongst themselves, this one guy said, "What makes this Tony guy think that his approach is any different to all the other whiteys who are trying to fix Africa?"
Right.
So that was his attitude at the start. By the end of the visit, and we went through land that was very, very dry, but the communities were restoring the forest, and then we went to Ethiopia together. In his story, he said, if all the billions of dollars that have been wasted on aid in Africa had have gone into this technique, then perhaps we would have seen some positive change.
Well, his eyes were open too. I hope he understood where the inspiration came from.
Oh, yes, we had lots of discussions. Yeah.
Because it's interesting, isn't it? This is a theme for this program, Open House. We like to point to life, things in the world, through the lens of faith and say, open your eyes. You can see God at work here in so many different ways.
Yes, yeah.
What have you seen as a result of that work then in Africa?
Well, in New Zealand, over the following 20 years after that discovery in 1983, the technique spread from farmer to farmer to more than 5 million hectares. That's 50% of the farmland of Niger. And there are approximately 200 million trees there today that were underground 20 years ago.
200 million, did you say?
Yes, and it didn't cost a cent, apart from our time there and the small project budget that we had at that time.
Yes,
it was largely a farmer generated movement across the country.
Yes, so it's an education process. But then you'd have to battle the skeptics who say, "Well, hang on a minute, we cut the trees down so that we could grow crops, but if we put the trees back, if we let them regrow, that won't work."
Oh, it was hard. It took a good decade to convince the majority of farmers, and again, I guess that this was God's working. In 1983, we convinced 10 volunteer farmers to at least try it on a small corner of their farm.
Right.
And they became the laughingstock of the village. They were ridiculed. Mm. And when the trees began to grow, people would come at night and steal them. And everything could have finished in that year.
Yeah.
In 1984, there was a big famine, and it could have been a disaster. But the government said, if you're going to give food aid, people have to work for it. And we eventually were in a position to be able to run a Food for Work program. And so we had a captive audience in 100 villages. And through that Food for Work program, we introduced the concept across those villages, and that was the start of the movement. People had enough time during that first year to see, actually, Tony might be mad, but he's not completely mad. We still got a crop, even though the trees are growing. We had a little bit more fuel wood. There was some fodder from some of the tree species. The nature of the soil is changing. There's more organic matter. The wind speeds are being cut, and so on and so forth. So that year allowed them to draw their own conclusions. And from that little core group, the idea spread across the country. And just to finish off a little bit on the impact question, Niger is one of the poorest countries in the world. It's something like 178 out of 178 on the UN Human Development Index.
Yeah.
That tree cover, the 200 million trees, it's estimated that the increased yield in grain every year, so no subsidies for fertilizer, no project investment, but every year farmers are growing an additional 500,000 tons of grain. And their gross income from grain, from selling firewood and from other other activities associated with those trees is in the order of $900 million across the country, in the poorest country in the world. So it's had a very, very significant impact in that country, and today that idea is spreading around the world.
Oh, God bless you. This is Open House, and we're speaking with Tony Rinaldo, crazy white guy who grows trees, or in fact, one of the most substantial contributions ever made to combating world poverty in our lifetime, and probably beyond. Tony, there are some great lessons in this, and I'd like to explore a couple of those with you. Firstly, there's something here about the way God made the world, and if we battle the world rather than working with his environment, in other words, tending the garden he gave us rather than degrading it, that we'll get better outcomes. As an agricultural scientist, is that how you see it?
All too often in our approach to agriculture, we're trying to force creation to do things it wasn't meant to do, or force it to do things in a way that's destructive. And if instead of that, we will sit and listen to creation and observe it and learn from it, there's so much to be gained by working with God's creation. And this has been our experience in Niger, in a very, very harsh climate. When we removed the trees, we were having wind speeds of 70 kilometers per hour that buried the food crops. We had soil temperatures of 60 degrees Celsius. So those tender little shoots, when they germinated, they kept fried. The soil was very infertile. All kinds of insect pests arose, and we were more vulnerable to drought. As soon as we started working with nature, those adverse conditions began to be reversed.
Marvellous. And the second lesson that I'd just like you to reflect on, in particular for young people who may be interested in going into science but don't really see a pathway to doing great things, someone whose young son, I think, is a chemist at university, said, "My son, you know, I'd like him to do something positive rather than just going to work for a petrochemical company or, you know, developing the new generation of cling wrap film." So, what do you say to young scientists about the way they can use their faith?
Certainly, pray about it. Ask God what it is that He's already prepared beforehand. What good thing does God have for you to do to make the world a better place and to serve Him?
Ephesians 2 again.
Pardon?
Ephesians 2 again.
Yes. And to seek counsel, talk to people, other scientists already working in the field and using their gifts for God's work. Ask them how they got into that and even try to spend time with them. I've just taken a young fellow with me to Indonesia. He's studying agriculture and very interested in doing the type of work that I did. And just that trip there really opened his eyes and I think encouraged him greatly to keep following that call.
And I could say then that you might add that to not just science, but any other profession or calling that you might be embarking upon. It might be as an economist or it might be as an engineer, but there's a way to use your skills in the way that God intended. And you've shown us a window on that, Tony.
Yeah, definitely. I'd agree with that.
Well, Tony Rinaldo, may God bless you and your work. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Stephen. It's been a pleasure.